It's me, Maria Vasquez Boyd, and Art Speak Radio here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in and making us a priority today because, yeah, we matter, and you do too. So thank you so much. And if you're listening online at kkfi.org, we're happy for your ears there too. So, I want to express my gratitude towards our listeners who contributed to our pledge drive last week. It's all about community radio. It's all about serving the audience and playing what you want to hear. So thank you so, so very much to the community of people who pledged this week. Today in Art Speak Radio, I've got writer, poet Jim Kahn, artist Lynn Benson, writers and poets, authors Wayne Courtois and Chinsea, and we're all here in the studio live from 90.1 FM KKFI in Midtown, Kansas City, Missouri. So let me introduce you to our first guest. Jim Kahn lives in Overland Park, and he's published poems in Number One Magazine, Wittenberg Review of Literature and Arts, Pharaohs, Unlikely Stories, Read Local, Rigorous, Rat's Ass Review, and Chapbooks Pan for Billy Collins, and Nanotext. And he's also slated for Chef Poetry, Clockwise Cat, and I-70 Review coming out a little bit later this year. So welcome, my friend Jim Kahn.
Thank you, Maria.
Terrific to have you here. You know, it's interesting, as I report every week from the community, creative community, I met Jim at a poetry reading at the writer's place, and we just sort of had this conversation, introduced one another, and I said, well, let's take a listen to your work, have you come on the program and talk about, you know, what... talk about your writing, your poetry, and sort of what inspires you, and have you read some work. So I'm glad you said yes.
Oh, I'm excited to be here, and that's one of the great things about the Kansas City poetry community, that it's not all about the writing. It's about the relationships, right, and getting to know and meet people, and just the amount of enthusiasm there is across really a broad sector of Kansas City. It joins different parts of the community together, geographically, economically, socially, and that's what the arts are supposed to do.
Right, right. And I love that we all have such different voices that we learn from one another. We hear each other's opinions and thoughts and musings and all that. You've been a writer for some time.
Well, I wrote a little bit in college, and then I did more technical professional writing just as part of my career, and it's only in the past two or three years that I found the time and the will to get back into writing poetry again. Mm-hmm. And over the course of 30 years, it sure has changed. It was a very narrow academic field back in the day, and now it is a very welcoming and opening field, and as you mentioned, there's a place in poetry for everybody's voice.
Yeah.
You don't have to be college educated to write poetry. There's a desire for these different voices. There are a couple of poets in Kansas who go out to the prisons and work with prisoners, and we've had them come in and read in Overland Park, and just to hear their voice and their story in the way they talk and the experiences they've been through, you start to realize that all of the voices carry a validity, and they come from a different place in society, mm-hmm, and we want to hear those voices. And that's certainly true in the publication side of it, too. There mm-hmm. are places that are looking for people who have neurodevelopmental disorders. There are places that want ADD poetry. There are just all these different kinds of voices. And I think we're realizing that it's not that we're aiming for a particular voice. It's that we want to hear a lot of voices.
Yeah.
We want voices that move us, because not necessarily because they're artistically refined, but because they come from a place where we haven't been and we haven't heard that voice.
Well, and with every guest that I have on the show, I always think, and I try to relate to them, that everyone has a story, whether, you know, it's as a new or emerging writer or artist, performer, musician, people that you meet in your neighborhood or wherever you meet people. Everyone has a story, and it's, and I like that you said about the prison, about the poets in prison, because actually I've had some facilitators with the prison systems who have been on the show, and I will have another fella on later on next month. You know, everyone has a voice, everyone has a story, and we need to hear that, and we need to sort of celebrate that diversity.
Yeah, and there's a whole other part of that that's just starting to emerge, too, which is that this writing is very therapeutic for people, whether it's veterans with PTSD. They're starting to find out that things that they can't say to their family in the spoken word, they can work through psychologically in the act of writing. Same with prisoners. You can, and same with all our lives and the problem areas in our lives. The writing itself can be very therapeutic, and then sometimes it takes a lot of courage to share that with other people. And that's another thing that's nice about these diverse voices, is you just get a sense of the person and what it took for them to stand up and say that. And not only that part of it, but the community that's listening seems like they already understand that, and they're welcoming of that. They're not there to say, well, this rhyme isn't right, or I don't like the way you said that, or I don't agree with your politics. It's not about that part of it anymore.
Yeah, I like that. You know, I am anxious for you to read some of your work. I'm excited, I should say, not anxious, excited to hear some of your work live.
Well, thanks, Maria, and I'll start out. I'm almost 60, so
kid, you look young to me. I'm going to take a picture of you just for that.
Yeah, it's the soft lighting in the studio. So this first poem is about colonoscopy, and it's entitled Voodoo. On doctor's orders, boil powdered hoof and gristle, call it jello, and let it chill. Take no red or purple except the tiny pill. Burble, burble, my toil and trouble. In the shaman's temple, a fang strikes and stings my hand. I flinch and see the draw of blood. The IV drips its potion in my vein. Certainty slips and fades to gray. I hold no gree-gree and hear no hurrying drums, just the thrum of trance, and I am gone. Still, a black snake slithes a wicked dance, slithers in, takes possession, takes sidelong glance. I wake and hear the doctor's voice, no polyps left to fear. The shaman whispers, let's dance again in 10 more years.
We know what that's like.
Yeah, once you've been through it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I like something that you said earlier about, you know, writing it, how it's therapeutic. I think the pattern that I hear over and over again from many of my guests that sit right where you're sitting is that art heals, that art has the power to help heal people, their wounds, and sort of give them an outlet for their pain or their joy, you know?
I think that's exactly right, and there's different levels to it. There's kind of there's the national level of healing. So you have poets who maybe don't write so much from a personal space, but they write in terms of the nation's wounds. And you have people who write from a very personal space in terms of joys and wounds. And it's one of the great things about poetry, is that we're in a time now where you can write about whatever you want and you can write however you want. And that's it's freedom of speech is what it is. And that's so important to our society.
What sort of poetry, what sort of work are you drawn to? I'm just curious.
Well, two different kinds. One is kind of addressing social wrongs and societal wrongs. And then the other part that I'm kind of slow arriving at is writing out a personal experience, that it's okay to do that. You know, I'm a son of immigrants, and when I first came here, I spent a lot of time being white and acting white and talking white, and my mind is white. But I've kind of learned that it's okay to also, you don't have to hide your cultural origins anymore. In fact, there's a uniqueness that comes out of that as well.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Out of that, I know here in Kansas City, there's so many different diverse groups, LGBT writers and brown voices and, you know, black voices. There's so many different groups, you know, but as a writer, you can just sort of cross over any of those places, you know, with your work. You know, you can focus on, you know, being a brown voice or whatever, but there's also open arms for other genres.
You can and you can't, because you have to be very careful about cultural appropriation.
I've written in
not so much in other voices, but out of other experiences, and I just have to. There's ways to do that that are appropriate. Here's a poem that's kind of, it doesn't have a particular voice, but it crosses across a lot of different parts of society, and it's more about the words and what that evokes in the mind of the reader, rather than it is about the structure of the narrative. This is called Skin in the Game. Trade winds whisper to cold brain, own anything, even dark skin. Coffle, shackle, cracker, coil of rope. Hydrocarbons whisper to fracking brain. Own anything, even native skin. DAPL, attack dogs, water cannon, icy weather. Ambition occupies skin, whispers to brain. Again, own everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very nice. Very nice. If you've just tuned in to Art Speak Radio, I'm talking to Jim Kahn, who is a writer, author of many published poems. And I want to talk about the more recent work that's slated to come out this year, Chef Poetry, Clockwise Cat, and I-70 Review. And new work, completely new work, and...
Yeah, here's some newer pieces.
Okay,
this one kind of more talks about the issues of wealth distribution, because right now they're saying six people own as much as the bottom half of the world's population. So that's pretty major income inequality when you can have six people own as much as half the world. So this is called It Takes a Club. Eight own as much as half the world. You can fit them on a golf cart. Zuckerberg, Buffett, Gates, Slim, Bezos, Bloomberg. You need a planet to hold the other 7 billion of us, and a baton as big as Jesus. $426 billion riding the fenced links, and still not enough for rent at the end of a paycheck. We got the bum's rush, and they got zoysia grass. We got pitchforks and tire irons, and they've got the hoodies pulled over our heads.
You know, with work like that, what is your goal? Are you wanting people to respond, react? Are you wanting them to wake up? What is your goal? I find that interesting, because you know, so many people have different ideas about where they want their poetry, how they want it perceived. What are your thoughts?
It's been an evolution, and I think it is for most writers. You start writing about what concerns you, and then you kind of work through those processes, and you can get over your disappointment or your anger, and then you can decide what you want to do about it. Do you want to protest? Do you want to say, hey, I've had my say and I need to move on to other important things in my life? Do you want to try to inform other people? I feel there's a national conversation going on about wealth and income and fairness, and I would like to be a small part of that, but as a poet, you really don't have a lot of illusions, and if you do, they break down pretty fast, because, you know, it's more about the writing and the people and the enjoyment and you produce something and then you let it go, but you really can't make it do any more than it ends up doing.
It can provoke an idea or a thought or stimulate some sort of conversation.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I think that's really important. Like, you know, I don't think people who have a lot in life, they think they worked to get that, and they did, but they don't realize like the extent of the of the income maldistribution in the world. So I feel like sometimes maybe you point those kind of things out, and people all of a sudden their eyes will open up a little bit more, and when they hear the message a different way, they'll be a little more open to that, and that's part of, you know, the role of artists and poets in facilitating change in society. Because right now we're in a very transitional time.
Yeah, that's putting it mildly. You know, the piece that you just read, which of the publications will that be featured in?
Right now, that one has been submitted to a chapbook called Capital, and and this is you know how specialized poetry gets. It's someone's putting together a book just with poems about capital. So it's submitting there. It's submitted there, and it's waiting to see if it gets accepted. Which, you know, is, you know, maybe 10% 10% will get accepted.
Yeah, and then you also have Chef Poetry, Clockwise Cat, I-70 Review. That is, I-70 Review is Mary Frances Wagner.
I-70 Review, It's an awesome magazine, you know, covering, you know, I-70, but very much out of St. Louis and Kansas City. And the quality of writing in there is really, really, really high. So I was, you know, I think I submitted 5 poems and I had 1 accepted. I don't have it in my batch of work that I brought in, but I was really, really happy. As you're a poet and you're trying to kind of earn your way up the ladder, that's kind of one of the places that's a nice handhold or stepping stone or level of recognition among your peers.
I know the anxiety of being rejected still weighs heavily, you know, on a lot of writers. How about you?
It does, and I really try to work through it, and part of that is just deciding why I'm writing. Am I writing for other people to say, oh, that's really good, you're a great writer? Am I writing because I want to write? And between those two spaces, you have to make compromises. You have to write. If you want to be published, you have to write in a way that other people understand and enjoy. You're not really writing for other people to say that's really good. You're writing to create an enjoyment and appreciation in the mind of your reader or audience, just as you do with your show. Your show's not about you. It's about the experience of the person who listens to it. So you have to kind of move all up and down that spectrum if you want to have a public voice. But if you want to have a private voice, then you write the way you want and about what you want and exactly how you want. But then you can't expect other people to have an appreciation of it either.
I like that. Very well said. You know, with the publications that are due out later this year, I suspect there will be book release parties and that sort of thing. So I-70 Review, I believe they have a Facebook page and perhaps some of the others.
They'll be having a release party later this year at the Writer's Place. They do that every year, and then everyone who was published in there has an opportunity to read their work there if they want to. I went to their last release, and it was really nice just to see so many poets from different areas getting together and just enjoying each other's reading. I mean, poetry is fairly pure because there's no money in it, so it's really people getting together for the enjoyment of it.
Yeah, I love that. Jim, do you have any final words or want to leave us with a final poem?
Yes, I'd like to read a final poem. Please. And this is about a person who's a Holocaust survivor who lives in Kansas City and shared her story with me. The title is 48689, which are the numbers that she has tattooed on her forearm. She was nearly 70 and catching the evening news when the buzz-cut skinheads appeared on the big-screen TV, gathering to explain that it was all just a hoax. She had thought the dead dead, but now the remnant past prickled about her and the peephole of memory swung open. Tiny white bones began rising up to consciousness, and she journeyed back into cattle cars and marched through the fresh and falling snow. When tilling fields for crops, she was startled again by the tiny white bones of babies turned to fertilizer. She revisited the half-living about the edge of fire and heard voices from her childhood that had gathered to the chambers. Now, when I walk into her sewing shop, she looks up and her pale eyes flash and smile. The bulb of a vintage Singer machine blazes yellow on the backs of her hands as her fingers draw thread through a needle's eye. Her veins are old, full, and blue like tattoos. When her hand feeds fabric to the seam, the veins bulge, and I see the dull blue numbers on her forearm are ink from another century.
Beautiful. Thank you so very much. Thank you, Jim Kahn.
Thank you so much, Maria. I appreciate KKFI and their unique voice and what they do for the community.
Bless your heart. Well, many, keep us posted on your publication when the release is. Just send me an email or something and I'll be sure to announce it. We'll have you back.
Thank you very much.
Very good. We're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio after this. Well, hello there. It's ArtSpeak Radio, and I'm Maria Vasquez-Boyd with you every Wednesday, noon to one. Thank you so much for tuning in, listening to us online, or wherever you're listening to us from, on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Up next, I have Lynn Benson, and she was born not far from the Atlantic Ocean and has always felt a tug to be near water, which is a primary focus in her current work. She isolates particular meandering lines and shapes of our world's rivers and shorelines while investigating the specific issues surrounding those places, always attuned on a larger scale to the delicate balancing act of our current natural and political world when it comes to water stewardship. Yet the work itself is far from serious. Paper Rivers is an extension of her previous project, deriving new work from archival pigment prints of her own oil paintings of river paths. And returning to the prints, she has cut and isolated the water from the land, then collaged, stacked, and rearranged rivers and landscape into vivid surprises. Welcome, my friend Lynn Benson.
Hi, Maria. Thank you so much.
You bet. You know, this is so exciting, the work that you have. And I should say, as part of this press release, all good things must come to an end. So thank you for coming in, Lynn Benson. Just kidding. No, your show is coming down this Friday. You have a closing reception at right. the Gillis Gallery, right?
Yes, yes. That's on Friday night, and then I will also be there on Saturday afternoon, because I know that Friday is pretty busy. There's a lot going on.
Yeah,
and
it's crazy.
Yeah,
like that.
Which is great.
Good.
Great for the community.
It's good.
Hard if you're, you know, in the corner of it, wanting people to come see your last your last chance to come. But there's a lot happening in that corner of the city, actually, mm-hmm. on Friday. There are several other galleries that are there. And this is in Columbus Park that I'm speaking
of. We love
of.
Columbus Park.
It's great.
Yeah.
I've really come to appreciate that area a lot. I'm in Gillis Gallery, which is newly opened through Chris Dahlquist's studio. Mm-hmm. And so I'm her inaugural guest and very honored to be so. And just down the street from Kiosk Gallery, with whom I've had a really great relationship over the years, and then also Trap is in the other direction.
We love our Dan Free.
Yes, and then there are at least one or two, I'm not sure. then there are one or two other galleries as well that I'm not familiar with. But, Columbus Park this Friday and Saturday. And, yeah, it's been a fun project, and I think the project is a good fit for the space that she has and is developing further. It's very warm, and my work is experimental, and it felt like a like it would be the right amount of space. You know, artists have to think about that.
Yeah.
Is it a good fit?
Yeah.
And why? And the fact that it's by the river makes it especially appropriate.
Now, and these are larger scale?
Actually, I'm glad you asked. They are small scale.
Okay.
A lot of my work is small scale, not all of it, to be sure, but they are small scale. There are, you know, negative spaces and stacking and sort of some playful things that happen. I had a lot of fun with it in taking apart previous work that I liked as it was and that, you know, was shown as a body of work. Because they were multiple prints, I had the ability to take a full set out of the collection, and there were 43 pieces in that collection of prints. These are archival pigment prints. To back up, because it's a little complicated, and yet I think it's part of the intrigue. I'm gonna back up a bit.
Sure.
I had done a few years back some oil paintings of actual river paths. So as you would see them from the satellite view, right? Then it happened that in the studio I had my camera and one time was playing with looking at one of the canvases instead of directly, indirectly across the plane of the canvas, if that makes sense. So that instead of seeing it from a satellite view where it is more of a map based image with, you know, colored and so on, but you're looking sideways and you're looking as if you see this land, this, you know, where land meets water, you've got a shape, but suddenly it changes. If you're an airplane, you can see as you're taking off and landing these beautiful shapes, and it happens, you know, when you're coming into Kansas City. Well, so those became a series of prints, and they were details and isolated pieces. And then once you cut those apart so that you are separating the land from the water, you have, for lines, you have the water shapes that still are the actual shapes representing actual rivers. And here I'm speaking of the Potomac, the Anacostia, the Mississippi, the Missouri, and the Illinois, and the Kaw, all represented within the several paintings that had gone through this process. So it's all sort of, what's the word, sort of self-referential, or there's another word I can't think of. But it's taking one project into another, into another, and felt very organic in that sense. But I was very pleased when I started playing with the parts and pieces. I think I've always loved collage and design, and suddenly some things start to happen that you can't foresee, of course.
Now, for our listeners that are intrigued about your work, would you share your website? So,
yes.
Because I know you have a body of work, you have a blog and all of that, but is there something specific that they can go to?
Absolutely.
To the website.
LynnBenson.com, and then if you go /blog, or if you get to LynnBenson.com, you can click on blog. You can obviously see all the various bodies of work, but the blog top posting is specifically about this show, and we'll describe what I have and have an image and specific information about the where and the when.
For Paper Rivers.
For Paper Rivers, exactly.
And for listeners, I can tell you that it's at the Gillis Gallery at 1029 East 5th Street, Kansas City, Missouri, and that's Columbus Park area. So the closing reception is Friday, June 16th from 6 to 9 p.m. You know, I think Columbus Park is one of the best little neighborhoods for art. I mean, we've got some terrific communities of art all around the city, but for the Columbus Park area, it just feels so close-knit and welcoming. You know, it's just an older community
Evidently.
Yeah, that's had a lot of history.
Yes, yeah. More than I realized. Yeah. I really appreciate it a lot.
Now, I do want to mention that Lynn's work has been exhibited in juried shows from Hawaii to Brooklyn. And again, one of your most recent large-scale projects, Water Places, 100 works on paper, exhibited at the Kansas City Design Center in 2015. And it was purchased by the Mariana Kistler Beach Museum in Manhattan, Kansas, and will be unveiled within a solo show in the spring of 2018.
Right.
Congratulations to you on that.
Thank you.
And then you've also had some work through the tributary at La Esquina.
Yes.
It just closed down June 10th.
Yes, yeah. That was a really fun experience. I had a chance to meet some other artists that I didn't know, some mm-hmm. that I certainly did. And then, you know, it's interesting because when you have this interest, as I do, in water, you do tend to find those other people that also do. And like as Jim was saying earlier in the earlier part of your show, there's a certain conversation that I want to be a part of, and that's has been part of my statement at different times too. In the same way that you used that word, Jim, it was important to me when I returned to my art life a long time ago that I wanted to play with the possibilities. When you're talking about water, you can see it in a lot of different ways, and not to hit people over the head with all the issues, because I think we get plenty of that, but it's always in the background of what I'm doing.
So you said you when you returned to making art and mm-hmm. all that, you have, how long have you been working in the arts?
Well, I majored in art. It's interesting. I can answer your question several ways. The recent part of my art life has been since approximately 2007, so approximately 10 years. But it's interesting, as I have gotten deeper into what I'm doing, especially tied to water, mm-hmm. I have realized the influences that began when I was a toddler. Mm-hmm. Not just having been, you know, near the ocean when I was young, but the fact that my dad was a chemical engineer, and I overheard a conversation when I was, I'm going to say 9 or 10 or something, between my dad and his brother, who both were working for a chemical company. And we were out in San Francisco at the time, and I heard them talking about pollution from their mm-hmm. chemical plant into the bay. Mm. I remember nothing else about it, but I remember that conversation, and it really stuck with me. My mom gave me a book at one point by Rachel Carson, who is well known as an early influencer of the environmental movement. And so many other things have popped up that make me realize this is quite an honest concern.
Yeah, right,
that, and then the more recent realization that the acidification of the ocean was continuing gave rise to my first solo show, actually, that was a Lady Volkos in 2012. And so then, then coming forward, that you've filled in a few of the gaps. Yeah.
Well, I love that water is such an integral part of your work because, you know, as you mentioned, it is an important resource. And, you know, yet, and your work, do you feel there's some political statement, or is it the beauty, or is it...
All the above.
All the above.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. I have a friend who refers to me as working in the politics of water, and it's true. But I also care a great deal about the aesthetic part, just the artist in me, even separately.
Sure.
I want to have what I do be something that people are drawn to, and then they can discover the rest. It's
I like that.
Definitely true that I can go deeper and backwards into some, you know, sort of horror stories of some of the places that are depicted. But nevertheless, these places are beautiful. The lines, when you see them from above, are nature's lines. It's where water meets land, and there's some incredible beauty there that inspire me endlessly. But there's also huge reason for concern that it's going to only continue. So I'm in that kind of a place.
You know, I'm sure a difficult balance.
Yes.
In that,
yes.
You know, there's beauty and then there's horror. There's, you know, the pleasure and there's the pain and all of that. I have to ask you about your resources. As you said, you know, maps of the rivers and all that. Is it something that you find through the internet or through a firsthand experience of a place?
You know, the internet, the algorithms find quickly what you're interested in. So a lot of it comes because it knows what I've already clicked on.
Yeah.
But in addition, I have friends who are aware of my interests, and I go seeking it as well. It's all the above. There have been some. I have a small collection of some you know, cover stories from magazines, mm-hmm. And there's certain magazines that have done a great job, and certain websites and certain news sources that have, well, gosh. Yeah,
well,
and nonprofits and so on.
Yeah, yeah, and I know
it's out there. There's a lot out there.
Because, like you, you know, I've always loved aerial photography. I know when I was in college, when I was at the Art Institute, I found aerial photography. You know, mm-hmm. The view from above, and a huge book.
Oh yes, yes, I know.
Just beautiful,
they
saturated
are.
With color and pattern, and sometimes no color, but. Yeah.
Well, it's really fun then as an artist to play with those lines. Some of what I've done has been, you know, I've really abstracted a lot of it so that sometimes you can't even tell it's a map. Mm-hmm. But there's still an innate thing that happens. And I'm fascinated, too, with landscape and the whole concept mm-hmm. of landscape. You know, the horizon line isn't always part of what we view as landscape now. We're in airplanes and now we're in satellites, so mm-hmm. we're looking at the land, but mm-hmm. it's not quite the same yeah. horizon line. And in fact, in this show, there are a lot of shifting horizons and perspectives because it's collaged. And there is, in addition to the smaller works, because you did, I'll return to that for a moment, it is primarily smaller works, but there is also one installation. It's the first time I've ever done that. And it was sort of at the nudging of Chris, the owner of the space, there's a piece there that is about, I don't know, 8 feet tall, that is a collection of all of these pieces and parts that in every case where you see a curvy line, it represents an actual river path. But put together, there's something fun that happens that I'll leave it at that. My Instagram shows a little bit. I do want to mention the Water Places project that has been on display and will be again in 2018. I do have an Instagram account tied just to that, and okay. I'm slowly feeding in all of those 100 pieces. And it's just called the Water Places Project. And it's going to continue with the feed until about the time of that show next spring.
Terrific. Very good. Lynn Benson, you're a delightful guest.
Well,
I enjoyed
this.
Talking
Thank
to you.
So much, Mary.
Paper Rivers opening reception Friday, closing reception, excuse me, Friday, June 16th, 6 to 9 p.m. at the Gillis Gallery at 1029 East 5th Street, Kansas City, Missouri. And I want to make sure that our listeners know that Columbus Park, Tony, is just east of the City Market.
Right.
And it's
right.
really kind of a sliver. It goes between the City Market and what is that street?
It's 71. I'm not sure.
Google it.
Yes.
Google it. That's all I can tell you.
I always get there on 5th Street out of the City Market.
Yeah. It's a very small neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Very historic.
Very.
Gillis Gallery.
Charming.
Yes. 1029 East 5th Street.
It's
Lynn
on the
Benson.
Corner.
Yeah. Website?
LynnBenson.com.
Terrific.
Thank
well,
you.
Well, congratulations, and come back when your other show opens next year.
I appreciate it.
Don't wait that long, I guess. Okay, we're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio right after this. Hey, this is ArtSpeak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez-Boyd with you Thanks so much for tuning in today. Up next, we have a couple of very, very talented writers and authors. We have Wayne Coutois, and we also have, whoops, there's my paper, Chinsaya, who will be talking about the Celebration of Queerness. You laugh because I think I might have goofed up your name.
That's okay.
They're going to talk about the Celebration of Queerness that's taking place Friday, June 16th, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Writer's Place. Welcome, my friend Wayne. Oh, she's going to...
Chinsia, yes.
Okay, very good.
C.L. Catano.
All right. We're so happy that you could join us today. So what's... How many years is this now that the Celebration of Queerness has taken place?
This is going to be the sixth annual.
Wow.
So pretty excited about that. The first one was in 2012. And Charles Ferruza and
I... We love our Charles.
Yes. Charles Ferruza and I have been the co-hosts for these 6 years.
Terrific.
And it's been very exciting.
And, you know, I'm going to have you switch to that microphone, my friend, because this one I'm getting a little bit of buzz off of that. So, now, is this your first time that you'll be reading at the Celebration of Queerness?
It is my first time at this particular venue, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I can list off the other readers who are going to perform: Luann Fox, David Wayne Reed, Kelly Barth. Did I get everybody? I think that in Chinsaya?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, terrific. Writersplace.org is the website for more information. But it's really well received, isn't it? I mean, you get a pretty big attendance every year, don't you? And it just keeps growing, yes?
Yes, I think it's taken a place among the LGBT pride events in the city. And we try to position it so it doesn't conflict with the gay film festival or pride weekend. So it kind of has its niche now as the third Friday in June.
Yeah.
And we've been having really good attendance over the past several years. It's the only LGBT event that the Writer's Place does. So it's an important part of their calendar, and I think it's important to the community as well.
And for do you look for new and emerging writers, or are you just kind of looking for people with a different view, perspective?
I'm looking for people who are available.
Well, in that case,
that can be a problem sometimes in the summer with people traveling and so on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, usually I try to bring some new voices in, mm-hmm. but inevitably, of course, I always participate because I'm the big cheese. I get to put myself on the reading schedule.
We love that about you.
Of course, so does Charles. And the interesting thing about Charles is that he tends to write memoir-type pieces, mm-hmm. or autobiographical pieces that he reads.
He's so wicked.
I love him.
Which
is really good. Yeah, it's something that people often do, in fact, is they'll read autobiographical works.
Sure.
As well as poetry, fiction, different types of genre fiction, really whatever they want mm-hmm. to read, mm-hmm. they're certainly welcome to do.
And Chinsaya, what will you serve us on Friday?
Well,
what are you serving up on Friday,
kid?
What am I
serving up? Well, I'm serving up a little bit of lesbian fiction.
Uh-huh.
Right now, I'm kind of labeling my work as romance, but I think it spans suspense and drama and all that too, but it's a little bit harder to put it under everything. So you kind of have to consolidate.
And you're a published writer?
I am. I self-publish. Uh-huh. And I also have a short story published at Sapphire Books that'll be out in December.
Oh, terrific. And would you like to share any website with us or social
sure.
media that you're on? That
I'm on Facebook under author C.L. Catano, and my website is clcatano.com.
Terrific. Wayne, what are we going to hear from you? Do you have something today that you want to share with us?
Yeah, I'm really...
Let me put you on the spot.
I'm real sure that's fine. I knew you were going to do that, Maria. I'm really excited because I've been working on a long-form narrative poem, and it's written from the point of view of an old man. If you can believe such a
I'm
thing.
I'm putting on my imaginary cap.
I actually have never done this before. I've never written from the point of view of an older character. So I find it to be kind of liberating. I'm a grant writer, is how I make my living, of course, and I've worked with some agencies that focus on older clients and families. And so I've become very sensitive to the fact that this is a graying nation, and there are 10,000 people turning 65 every day, and we're going to end up with a very older population within a pretty short span of years. So there's going to be more and more attention paid to older people, and I think, you know, in the gay and lesbian community, that's a special concern because gay and lesbian people don't always have traditional family networks and can tend to be more alone as they get older and, you know, have their own concerns about how to make their way in the world as a senior citizen. This particular man that I'm writing about is a resident of the Ambassador Hotel on Broadway. And this is something else that I haven't always done, is use specific Kansas City addresses and landmarks in a poem.
Well, honey, it's about time.
And he's in the first part of the poem, or that I'm going to read anyway, he finds himself lying on the sidewalk looking up, and he's not really sure how he got there. But there are people who have gathered around him, and they're kind of tending to him, and he's thinking about just various topics, and a couple of times he speaks to his husband, who is no longer living, and this is a fragment where he does that. I had a husband who made me necessary in a world that couldn't tell what I was good for. Perhaps he's here now, gently tugging at me. Darling, I've got so much to tell you. They took down the weeping willow in Luce Park, the one you loved, that stood on an island in the duck pond all by itself. No wonder it wept. And they closed the pizza place on Oak. The storefront's been dark forever, but I can still taste the sauce. Now the murmurs rise in pitch. Excitement stirs the air. Whoop, whoop goes a siren. Oscar is leaving. I'm sure those are his steps quickening toward the plasma center. Other strangers are taking over. Their silhouettes block the sun. Odd how quickly I can be secured and moved. Odder still, I never thought till now. Can I move on my own? What have I lost? For this involuntary nap on concrete, what's the cost?
Wow. Nice, very nice. So, wow, I love that.
So there are a number of concerns going on. There's just the matter of getting from one day to the next as you get older and physical problems crop up and social problems crop up. And then also he keeps having these memories and flashbacks of his husband of 30 years. And
wow.
That's just another part of his daily life.
Here, pinky swear, we're not going to get old.
Well, I think we can take that for granted.
And we want to say hello to Ralph. Hello, Ralph.
I think he's working right now, bless his heart.
So I'm talking to writer Wayne Courtois and Chinsia, talking about the celebration of queerness this Friday, June 16th. I hope I said that right, because I have it underlined here and everything, and I just keep blowing it over. June 16th, 7 to 9 p.m. at the Writer's Place, 360 Pennsylvania.
3607.
3607 Pennsylvania, writersplace.org for more information. You know, we're running out of time. I do want to thank you so much for coming in today. Chinsia, Wayne Courtois, Jim Kahn, Lynn Benson, Wayne, I already said that, Yeah, thank you so much for sharing this information with us and sharing your piece, and we look forward to hearing more from you. Terrific. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Next week, June 21st, we're almost through June. We've got Margaret Heng with Makers Faire. We've got Josie May with Spiva Art Center. And photographer Sharon Rodriguez will join us next week. Stay tuned for my beloved Jeff Harshbarger, Jazz in the Afternoon, followed by Groovy Grant at 3. Thank you all so much for listening. This concludes another episode of Art Speak Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in. And honey, I'm coming home.